You're listening to the Isaka Podcast. In this From Page to Podcast episode, we're speaking with Brian Gollenbeck, author of the Isaka Journal Volume 3 article, Moving Risk Management from Fear and Avoidance to Performance and Value. In this episode, we're discussing some of the ways that risk management can add value, and we're discussing some of the factors that might affect cybersecurity strategies. But to begin, Brian, why is there a fear and avoidance view when it comes to risk management?
Well, first, as the article discusses, people have a tendency to think of risk as something which won't happen to them or things that happen to other people, which is true until it happens to you or someone you know. Specifically, there's, you know, this perception that things won't happen to me or that I can avoid things, if you will. A simple example might be death. People don't want to talk about their funeral because that means they'll have to admit that maybe eventually they might die. And people believe they're safe drivers, and therefore their plan is to avoid accidents, not get into one. It's similar in information security in that the traditional approach has been to use fear to sell security tools. And, you know, many security vendors will come in and talk about the latest bad things that are going to happen to your company if you don't purchase their product. And they really sell fear, uncertainty, and doubt, or FUD, instead of trying to sell a product and a value.
And so what exactly is causing the shift in viewing risk management from an outside-in approach to more of an inside-out approach that can deliver value?
Mostly it's a few things, right? So digital transformation, the idea that every business needs to integrate some digital footprint, some cyber capability in order to maintain or continue their business or in order to drive it into new areas. And then there's the privacy awareness. As you've heard in the news, whether it's the Senate, the House, or just the standard newspaper and news channels coming across, I think the general populace is becoming more privacy aware. There have been major incidents by major social media companies that have demonstrated that people believe their information is valuable. There's the concept that, you know, data is the new oil. And so when you think about it that way, you have to change from just managing regulatory compliance, from just doing audits and checkboxes, to assisting your business with taking on this digital frontier and working with business leaders in order to understand how they're going to leverage this data and what acquisition and management of this data means to the company, so that you can then align it with maybe the cyber risks that might jeopardize that business model and assist that business leader in managing those risks through that digital transformation, through the privacy awareness of the public.
So your article, interestingly enough, discusses seatbelts in the context of risk. So in what ways are seatbelts and cybersecurity analogous?
That's a good question. The basic principle or basic premise is people just don't see the risks until they've been exposed directly to them. If you don't know anyone who's been in a serious accident, you might think that they're not that common. Also, people in many cases don't understand the value of safety or security controls and how they reduce the risk. Risk management can help with that. It's that direct interaction and discussion around risk that shows the fact that the risk is present. And then, much like security alerts, security reminders, security awareness, seatbelts are a direct inconvenience. I mean, they might rub on your neck. It might be uncomfortable around your waist. However, you know, after you see someone survive a crash with a seatbelt versus maybe see a serious injury or death from someone who's not wearing a seatbelt, in many cases, people still choose not to wear one. They figure that they're just going to avoid crashes or that it doesn't happen to them. Well, in security is much the same way. Until some of these laws have come along around cyber breaches and, you know, announcing incidents and the fact that the company needs to be responsible in telling their consumers and their customers that there has been a breach, people weren't aware of it. They didn't see it. And that's why security, you know, the industry sees the alerts, the industry sees the breaches, but maybe the board of directors doesn't, maybe the customers don't. And so these regulations are starting to bring visibility, which is part of why we have to move into that analogy of looking inside the organization and assisting the business, because the CISO is always fighting for every dollar and has to prioritize every dollar that they're going to spend and justify it. And if those things align with the business objectives and digital transformation, that provides for sometimes more dollars. So it's a risk management can help a security team sell the value of their organization back to the business. It's also an area where they can bring solutions. Risk management involves both describing what the problems are going to be and then aligning on how you mitigate or fix or in some way reduce that risk using compensating controls.
And what are some of the specific outside forces that are guiding cybersecurity strategies?
Over the last couple of years, most organizations have been exposed to new privacy regulations. In the European Union, there's privacy for EU citizens. Within California, there is the California Consumer Privacy Act, which is going into effect January 1st of 2020, although some people predict it may get pushed out. And then most recently here, just in April or March and April, the Washington State released its SB 5376 regulation, which is designed for privacy of Washington citizens. And so there's a lot of visibility, a lot of regulatory kind of view. And then most importantly, I think, to large companies is that the SEC recently released new interpretive guidance in February of 2018, where they were communicating the concerns of shareholders back to the leaders of companies traded on the stock market and saying, look, cyber risks need to be part of what you're communicating about. If your company does work in cyber, then that company needs to communicate what their cyber risks are and how they are managing them all the way up to the board level. The SEC goes so far as to stating that someone on the board should be knowledgeable of cybersecurity and or cyber risks, or that they need to bring someone in order to educate the board on those things. And that's pretty powerful when board level entities are starting to talk about things.
And so why should organizations make risk management continuous? And in your opinion, are organizations currently doing this?
To answer your second question first, you know, I think that there are industries where risk management is more of a continuous process. Some industries adopt risk management, or really their business is risk management, like insurance and financial services. Those entities have been early adopters around continuous risk management because the bits and bytes, the ones and zeros that are being handled by their IT systems actually represent, in many cases, real dollars, real transactions. And so there's fraud, and then there's IT risk, and then there's IT risk that can contribute to fraud. And so those industries maybe are more early adopters of a continuous risk management process. But outside of those early adopters, there's a lot of companies that haven't really solved this problem or are looking to solve it as they become more digital. And those entities see IT risk management much more like a compliance exercise. They have PCI DSS, which they need to comply with if they're going to handle credit cards, or they handle health information, and therefore they've been compliant with HIPAA for a while now, but they don't look at risk management in the IT space outside of their EPHI. And so there's still a lot of opportunity out there for professionals in risk management to assist their companies with the implementation of things like ISACA's Risk IT.
And so what's the value of having a holistic cyber risk model?
The value is really as you move into the cloud, as an organization starts to break down the traditional barriers of security, things like data centers that used to be part of the company, things like firewalls and other IT controls that divide a network into segments and therefore minimize the risk because only that one segment might be at risk. Those things need to both mature and become more continuous and adaptable as data moves outside into mobile devices, as data gets moved into cloud systems and gets shared across partners. With all of the barriers that we used for many years in IT dissolving, new barriers and new mitigating controls have to be created. That means that it's a much more dynamic situation. If a doctor wants to look at a patient record, he wants to do that, but you have to still comply with HIPAA, or more importantly, you have to still maintain the privacy of the individual, not just comply with HIPAA, because the reputational risk of that breach is a significant risk in addition to just the single breach or single record privacy breach for that doctor. And the only way to react or to manage risks as the data flows around so rapidly and moves between clouds and mobile devices is to put in place something that gives IT professionals, security professionals, risk professionals, and ultimately business management visibility into where those risks are, and then solutions to kind of manage and control or reduce those risks.
And how can organizations move from a check-the-box security approach to more of an inside-out risk-centric strategy?
Companies can use ISACA's Risk IT Framework. The concepts that are expressed there revolve around partnering with business leaders about, you know, documenting the value of IT risk management and integrating it with enterprise risk management. It talks about putting together that continuous risk monitoring, risk management, and ultimately what that results in is demonstrable risk reduction for the business and a value proposition to the business that maybe they haven't seen before, but that involves being able to put in place that continuous risk monitoring that enables the rapid decision making.
Thanks, Brian. And that's all we have time for in this episode of the podcast. But if you're interested in learning more, read Brian's ISACA Journal Volume 3 article, Moving Risk Management from Fear and Avoidance to Performance and Value. And if you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, please leave us a rating on whatever podcast player you're using.